Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Moali.
Hello there. Welcome to episode 402 of the Sexology podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Moali, and I've got another interesting episode lined up for you today. We're diving into the topic of fisting. Last week, we chatted about anal sex, and today we're continuing that conversation about fisting and why so many folks find it intriguing. Our special guest, Tina Horn, is a writer, educator, and media maker. Her book of fetish cultural criticism, based on her long-running indie podcast, Why Are People Into That?, just got published. Tina is a creator, writer of the sci-fi sex rebel comic book series, Safe Sex. She was also the host, co-writer of Phone Sex Podcast Operator. Her reporting on sexual subcultures had appeared in Rolling Stones, Playboy, Glamour, and elsewhere. She authors so many different articles, books. You can find her full bio in the show notes. Today, we're going to talk about fisting, as I mentioned. First, we're going to start hearing about Tina's story of becoming a professional dominatrix. And we're going to talk about kind of fisting, misconceptions. We're going to talk about kind of what makes it intriguing and how to do it right. But before we dive into the episode, just wanted to give a shout out to our wonderful sponsor, Firmtech. Are you anxious about sexual performance? Wonder what medications, supplements, diet actually work for you? When you can track it, you can hack it. Using FirmTech's award-winning tech ring, men can get their objective, personal information about their sexual health. The DickBit, the revolutionary cock ring, can be worn during sex to enhance pleasure, as well as overnight to gather objective data. With our easy-to-use app, you can track all the data you would need. Rings are more effective than pill for most men. I personally have recommended FirmTech to so many of my clients and they love it. It's easy to use. It gives you tons of great objective information and you can take it even the information to provider. So you already have your own lab at home. It's research proven, designed by a physician. So if you are interested to try it, make sure to go to myfirmtech.com. And for our Sexology podcast listeners, they offered a 10% discount. So please use Sexology at checkout to get 10% off. Again, the website is myfirmtech.com and the code is Sexology. Thank you so much for supporting this show. And let's dive into the topic with Tina Horn. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome Tina Horn to our show. Tina, welcome to our show.
So happy to be here.
I was just sharing with you that I love your book. It gives this perspective of what draws people to different sexual acts and in a deep pathologizing way. And today we're going to talk about fisting. But before going there, I know you have a very interesting background. So tell us, how did you become a professional dominatrix?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, so my new book is called Why Are People Into That? A Cultural Investigation of Kink. It's out June 4th, 2024. So probably when you're listening to this, it will be available wherever books are sold or taken out from the library. There's a hardcover, an ebook, and an audiobook read by me. So check it out. Patronize your local bookstore. I hope you will. And yeah, so I got my start as a sexuality writer, as a sex worker working in the sex industry. So I started working as a professional dominatrix in the Bay Area around 2005. And at the time, the way that I found that job was by opening up the adult gig section of Craigslist. And, you know, I've been telling that story for a long time, and it is wild to think about how the internet has changed and evolved, and that being able to get gigs and connect as workers and clients, or workers and establishments, sort of informal establishments like the dungeon that I worked at, is just not the same now, the way that the internet is surveilled and policed. So in 2005, it was a relatively straightforward process for me, from being a slut and a voracious reader of books about fetish sex and BDSM and sex work, you know, the politics of sex work and the experience, the real life varied experience of all different kinds of sex workers, being a lover of pornography and just a person who is curious and thirsty for lots of life experience. So I found a dungeon, and I was incredibly fortunate and privileged, and I use that word deliberately, to find a dungeon that provided a lot of education and community to me in terms of BDSM, kink, and fetish sex, but also as a worker. And I often say that is how I got started as a sex educator, was, you know, I was trained by workers at the dungeon, and then by the time I had experience working with clients, learning about everything from bondage to sadomasochism to fantasy and role play and all different kinds of things, fisting, which we'll get to. Yeah, soon I was teaching new people, new workers. And, you know, that's why to this day I identify as a educatrix, because my...
I love that.
not a portmanteau I came up with, but one that when I saw, I was like, I'm appropriating that, because it's important to me to communicate that my sex education is very much grounded in leather and kink countercultures and also in sex work. So that's my tale.
What a fascinating tale. And I'm kind of curious, with our society stigmatizing sex work, criminalizing it, it makes the environment very difficult for people in the industry. With Craigslist, how was that like? Was most people were safe enough? Did you had like specific measure of safety? Unfortunately, we cannot count a legal system for support. So tell us more about that.
Well, I'm so glad that you brought all of that up. You know, to this day, I do a lot of work with the sex worker rights movement. That's, you know, I know so many people who do policy work, who do direct services, who've created grassroots organizations, who do political lobbying and campaigns. And my focus of how I, insofar as I am a political activist, I try to put it into my journalism, my writing, my media making, even conversations like this one. And I'm so glad that you're grounding this discussion in a conversation about both stigma and criminalization, which very much go hand in hand. And there's a continuum between whorephobia and the stigmatization of all different kinds of sex workers, from professional dominatrixes to pornographers to people who are working as escorts in hotels or on the street, digitally mediated sex work like phone sex, and, you know, even a video platform like what we're talking on right now. There's a continuum between that and slut shaming and all of the stigma, and in some cases even criminalization and discrimination against people who are perceived to be promiscuous. But, you know, it is so much about the pervasiveness of purity culture and how that is seeped into our institutions of science and health and religion and the law, even when there's supposed to be division between those things. So I always like to bring that into these conversations, even though also, like, my book is very much about desire and fantasy and play, and, you know, you will definitely be better at sex after you read it. But all of this political and cultural and historical context is also, to me, like, inextricable from the context of, from conversations about human desire and pleasure. And to answer your question, at the time, you know, Craigslist was, it was a forum. It was a relatively new concept of, like, a digital version of a message board in a community center, or there was a website that no longer exists called Backpage. And the reason that it was called Backpage is that those kinds of ads for people to find each other, to have the experiences, maybe sometimes transactions that they were mutually agreeing to and consenting to, used to be in the back pages of weekly newspapers. If listeners remember those, if you remember those. So, I mean, again, you know, Craigslist was a forum. Craigslist was not responsible. Internet platforms are not responsible for what happens, I should say, were not then, and I don't think should have to be responsible for the experiences that happen between the people who meet using those tools, especially since those tools are often used for solidarity and community and education between workers, between people who are marginalized by society, right? So we don't have to get into a discussion about this American law of Vasta Sesta that's about 5 years old at this point, but there's been so much activism from the sex worker rights movement before, during, and after the passing of that federal law, which basically does make those platforms liable for the connections that are made between people who are using them. And when we lose those platforms, as we have lost the tool of the adult gig section of Craigslist, that is the reason that I'm here talking to you today, the reason that I've had the career that I've had, was because of the resources that I was able to find through that forum. You know, we've lost that. We're losing them. And increasingly online spaces where people can find each other are controlled by tech corporations. Anyway, but we're here to talk about hot sex. But all of this stuff is part of the context of that, certainly in my work, and always an important thing to talk about, I think.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I think like reclaiming pleasure is a political act. I truly believe that. And sometimes we take things as granted. I remember when the law was going that there was like a kind of like movement toward passing the quote-unquote law. We had like Alice Littles email me and said, oh, well, I want to come talk about this and like the implication. I was thinking to myself, like, it's not going to pass. There's no way it's going to pass. And then that passed. Or even with reproductive rights, right? It's like, there's no way that we're going to revert back. Like, and in front of my eyes, it did. So I think we all need to be hypervigilant when it comes to kind of sexual health, because how easily can we go back on things?
Yes, I'm really glad that you made the connection between reproductive rights and sex worker rights. In a nutshell, it's about bodily autonomy. And actually, I've been working for the past year with an organization that many of my friends from New York and the sex worker rights movement founded called Hacking Hustling. I definitely recommend people check out Hacking Hustling. I've actually been working on my own podcast project with them in collaboration with a pornographer friend of mine named Mickey Maud, that is about the exact thing that you just brought up. Essentially, what can the reproductive rights, the reproductive justice movement that is experiencing a new form of criminalization, learn from the work that the sex worker rights movement has been unfortunately in a position to be struggling for a long time? And yeah, it's building solidarity between these movements and focusing on what we have in common as opposed to our differences is so important for us all having the freedom and autonomy that we want to have in order to have this hot sex on our own terms that we want to be having.
Well, you know, growing up in Middle East, I firsthand witnessed that how your right to have hot sex can disappear in your eyes in a blink of moments. Like, and I'm not being dramatic. Like, I think I'm so glad that you are doing this advocacy work, education, all of that. It's so important. Going to your book, I feel one of the things that help people to understand more and kind of like have a different lens is education. And I know your book does that. So tell us about what motivated you to write this particular book.
Yes. So for folks who are watching on video, here's my book and here's a little book ASMR for for the podcasters. Like I said, it's called Why Are People Into That? A Cultural Investigation of Kink. And why did I write this book? Because I could. No, I to sort of bridge the gap between, you know, my origin story, I worked in the sex industry for a long time, and I eventually moved to New York City and started also working with a lot of the same topics, BDSM, queer identity, sex education, but more in the journalism space, writing for Rolling Stone and other magazines and websites, writing books. I've been writing nonfiction books about sex for a while now, teaching workshops in pleasure product stores, and doing my own podcast, which is called Why Are People Into That, which I started doing in 2013. And the idea with the podcast, Why Are People Into That, was to have, you know, I know so many people who know so much about sex, but also are, like you are, comfortable and confident talking about sex on a microphone with an audience or with a future audience. And I don't know if I thought about it at the time as an archive, but I just really wanted to have a conversation show about sex, kink, gender, and love, and all of the kinds of conversations that we would have in the dungeon, or that we would have in the leather bar, that we would have on porn sets. And, you know, I love writing, but I also love talking. And so knowing so many interesting people that I knew could create not only informative, but entertaining conversations was something that I really wanted to do. And it's also a relatively low barrier for entry in terms of making podcasts and putting them out into the world. And so I wanted to do that on my own terms. And so, you know, the show was always kind of like a cult sensation. Always, to this day, you know, I can't really leave the house without somebody saying, I love your show, which is very flattering and lovely. And so then eventually I got a literary agent, a wonderful literary agent, and she helped me to develop the exact nonfiction book proposal that was the book that I wanted to write, something in the lineage of, but totally unlike any book that has existed before, about sex, kink, gender, and love. And that also my literary agent knew how to sell. And we sold it to Hachette. And I spent about a year writing the manuscript. And I have a master's degree in creative nonfiction writing. So this is really my magnum opus of not only all of the information and so many stories that I have from my many adventures professionally, personally, with all different kinds of fetish sex and culture, but also really my chance to write a book that, you know, to really work on being a prose stylist and writing a book that people would, it would be a pleasure to read. And like I said, the book is educational and informative, but it's also designed to be horny and raunchy. I think that there's a lot of respectability politics that informative sexual education shouldn't be horny. And this book and my work, you know, flies in the face of that. And so, yeah, I hope people will be as aroused reading it as they are, I don't know, intellectually stimulated.
Well, it was a pleasant surprise for me, right? Because when we're reading in this kind of like psychologically minded content, that is like very medicalized and doesn't have that kind of soulfulness that your writing has.
Oh, thanks for soulful. That's really nice. That's a nice thing to say. Did the book make you horny? Can I ask?
Yeah. You know, it's like I can imagine you are similar to me. We get a lot of material. So for me, getting horny is tougher because we're constantly kind of having access to all type of adult kind of content, but I loved it. Yes, it was educational. It made me horny. The type of education I want.
Mission accomplished then.
But one of the chapters that was very interesting to me that I feel people are not well informed, and I learned a lot reading it, was about fisting. Can you tell us more about what is fisting?
No.
I love
again,
that.
Again, for the video watchers, making a fisting fist. So put simply, fisting is the enjoyment of an entire hand or most of a hand, or maybe even past the wrist inside of the body. So that could be in the front hole, vagina, cunt, whatever language you use for it, or the back hole, ass, rectum. You know, you might even call that your pussy, whatever language you use. And also the mouth, people love to have their throats fisted, and you know, any other hole that you could think of and that you can try to fit a hand into, I endorse it. I support it. And fisting is about so many things. I mean, I think the first thing to talk about is the fact that it is about the wonders of hand sex and all of the things that are wonderful about using a hand to fuck someone. And, you know, the fact that it kind of fisting has a narrative arc, you know, you have to go finger pads first, and you know, we'll get into this, but it's so because hands are so, you know, hands, they're all different sizes, but hands tend to at their widest point to be quite large and a lot to accommodate in any hole. So going really slow, using lots and lots of lube, lots and lots of communication, lots and lots of hydration is crucial for this kind of sex. And the hand, you know, it's articulated. We use it to do all kinds of things in the kitchen, in the garden, under the hood of a car, you know, so to write on a computer, our hands are capable of so much. We have these fancy opposable thumbs, and, you know, you can, using your hand inside someone, you can explore and learn so much about their anatomy, about their pleasure anatomy. What kind, you know, do they like pressure? Do they like teasing? Do they like a bit of the old in out? Do they like friction, more or less friction? Do they like the feeling of being filled? Do people like the sense of, I really want to take something really big? And like, some people are so aroused and satisfied by the feeling of that sort of bigger, better, faster, more, that accomplishment of taking something, maybe, you know, beating their personal best, or, you know, being a size queen, taking something really big. And it creates so much intimacy because it necessitates so much patience and communication. I mean, it doesn't, I've seen people who are very easy fists, and I've seen people who have a lot of experience who can take a fist quite quickly. So, you know, there's it takes all kinds. But so, and that's kind of with the emphasis on the fist itself, the hand sex. But then there's something that I talk about in the book that is not a term that I coined, but this concept that I love and I really want to disseminate, which is the idea of circlusion, right? Which is a term coined by this German writer, Beanie Ademjak, whose name I'm probably butchering, but Beanie wrote about this idea of circlusion as the hole or the vagina or the rectum or the mouth being active in penetration, in intercourse, in sex, to sort of defy the idea that the phallus is taking the active role and the hole is taking the passive role. And I think that that is so powerful. It's such a powerful concept, especially for people who might be used to being perceived because of their gender, for all kinds of reasons, as the more passive partner. And, you know, the idea of bottoming, the idea of, you know, accommodating cock or a toy or hand or foot or whatever, that bottoming, this is sort of like a confrontation of the myth that bottoming is passive, that it's just about taking it. Now, some people really enjoy being treated as a whole, being objectified, totally relaxing or surrendering to accommodate something. So I'm not suggesting that the idea of circlusion is that you got to reach out with your hole and grab something in order to be having like empowered feminist sex. Not saying that. It's just really something that I wanted to convey in my book, in the fisting chapter, all of the different chapters, is that different people like different things, and that there are so many possibilities, and that unfortunately, because of lots of different institutions and systems of power, we have these heteronormative concepts of normal sex, healthy sex looks one way, but there's so many different varieties of not only what sex can look like, but what it can mean to different people, also at different times of the day with different partners at different times in their life. So trying to take a more expansive view of all kinds of sex. But yeah, fisting, it's the best. If you haven't tried it, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Okay, let's be real. Who wouldn't want better sex? I mean, like, who wouldn't want to start having better sex right now? The easiest way to get started, just head over to adamandeve.com. They're seriously the best trusted name in adult products. And they're offering an amazing deal just for you. You can get 50% off almost any item when you're using my code SEXOLOGY, SEXOLOGY. And that's not even the best part. You'll also get free discreet shipping and rush processing. Like, they're not messing around. Your package will get there fast and nobody will know what's inside. Whether you're looking for a fun new toy or something else to get things spicy in the bedroom, Adam and Eve's got your back, and it's all just a few clicks away. So go to adamandeve.com, pick something exciting, and use code SEXOLOGY at checkout for 50% off and free shipping with rush processing. Don't miss out. Better sex is literally just a click away.
You know, the concept was the new concept about kind of like being an active receiver. And I was like reading your book, I was like, oh, it makes sense. But it wasn't something that I thought about. For me, when I was thinking about fisting, I was thinking about the pride of taking in something that's big and huge. But as you said, it could be multifaceted. And you were talking about the sensual, sensational experience of it. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big old switch or versatile. So pretty much everything when it comes to sex that I like to do as a top, I like to do as a bottom, or things I like to do as a sadist, I like as a masochist, things that I like as a dominant, I like as a submissive. And I love fisting people and I love being fisted. And as a fisting top, I love what I was describing earlier of really taking my time to work somebody and blow their mind. And, you know, there's a lot of technique to fisting. There's too much to go into now. And there's even more than can even be conveyed in my book. And there are lots of really great fisting classes and educators out there. So if you're curious about it, I recommend looking up some fisting education online or attending a class either online or where you live. But I love that I can fuck someone with as much strength and stamina as they have desire for. And that's another way that the bottom in a fisting scene, as we say, is sort of defies the idea of who's running the fuck, right? Usually we say that the top is running the fuck, but in this case, you know, if the bottom is a bottomless, insatiable pit of desire and wanting to just to accommodate, to get fucked, to take it, there's no end to how much they can take, how long they can get fucked when they're properly turned on, properly aroused, using lots of lube. Again, whatever hole you're using and whatever kind of lube you like, there are so many. And so I like the idea of just becoming like a fucking machine to please somebody as much as they want to be pleased. And yeah. And so then that's the sensation for me. And, you know, I mean, hands, like my hand does not have the same nerve endings as my genitals, but my hand has nerve endings. So being able to actually like touch somebody on the inside and feel their G-spot, feel their prostate, feel their cervix, feel their walls, their canal walls, is just, there is a space kind of beyond words to describe what that is like, to be able to feel that and to feel so connected to the person who is trusting you enough to open up enough to let you inside their body, so deep inside their body. And as a bottom, yeah, I mean, I guess it's like I was saying, everything that I want to say about what I like about the sensation is kind of the complement to what I just said about what I like as a top. It's amazing to be taken to a place where you can just come forever as much as you want to. And fisting has that effect on people. It certainly has that effect on me.
Well, thank you for sharing that kind of like part of yourself with us. And I can imagine it's vulnerable at times, and I appreciate the openness. And so before our listeners run to try fisting, what does preparation take? Because I know that preparation is a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say make sure that you're reading a lot of fisting literature about safety, about technique, about what are the important things to consider in communication with your partner before, during, and after. Definitely, I would definitely recommend having friends that you might not necessarily have as fisting partners that you can talk to about this practice, so that you have someone other than the person that you are practicing fisting with to talk about. There might be things that you don't want to talk to them about, at least at first, that having a trusted platonic friends is so important to be able to talk about that. But yeah, I mean, I've kind of already talked about the basics, which are really the basics for all kinds of good sex and good kinky play: hydration, communication, lots of lube, you know, knowing what kinds of lube works for different parts of your body. You might like one lube for vaginal fisting, another kind of lube for anal fisting, knowing which lubes are compatible with whether you're going to be using barriers like condoms or gloves. Compatible with that. Different people have different reactions to different kinds of lube. So I recommend going to a pleasure product store and really, you know, getting lots of samples and talking about, you know, being prepared to talk about the activities that you are interested in, what your experience is, what your body likes and doesn't like in terms of products. And going slow, taking your time, having a good breathing practice. Taking deeper breaths than you could possibly imagine needing to take. And, you know, even though there's an element of fisting that can be really great for people who are competitive or who like the sense of that sense of accomplishment that, you know, a friend of mine named Joe Osmondson, who's a wonderful queer sex writer, who I sent an early draft of the fisting chapter to, one of his notes was, can you include something about that, like, we did it feeling, which I did. So that's in the book now, thanks to Joe. But at the same time, I think that when you're overly focused on a goal and you're goal oriented, you might not, you know, it's the journey, not the destination. But also, and sometimes having that goal can help you to really push yourself into that zone where you're getting out of your comfort zone in that adventure way, but not so much that you are taking unnecessary risks or causing unnecessary harm. And so, you know, I personally, I'm never going to, if I'm having a fisting date with someone and I like don't get past the knuckles, I'm not going to be like, well, we didn't really technically fist today because I like was not in like all the way like up, you know, to my elbow. I think that having four fingers and maybe even like the tip of the thumb inside someone is fisting. If that's where someone wants to come, if that's where their body's at that day and that's what they want to take, that's extremely enjoyable for, again, it has the potential to be extremely enjoyable for everyone involved. So, but yeah, I think that those are the basics of what I recommend for sure.
Well, I think with preparation here, that people, as you said, the body is different, the amount of preparation would be different. And depending on where you are, like an all sort of thing in your body, in your cycle, all of that makes it different. Whenever we have an episode on anything like anus related or anything with size, the main concern that people have, oh God, is it going to impact my anatomy? And then I'm going to be too loose. Is that a concern people have?
Well, it's certainly a concern that people have, but it is... I don't want to say it's entirely unfounded, because taking all kinds of safer sex into consideration is a part of trying out anything new. The thing that people have to understand about sexual anatomy is that genitals are a part of your body. They have unique qualities, but your pelvic muscles are muscles like anything else in your body. So I always like to compare it to, there's a reason that athletes stretch before performing great feats with their body. They stretch because they can accomplish more, and they also stretch to reduce the risk of injury, right? So this is all about making risk-aware assessments and taking action to reduce risk and to understand the relationship between, you know, stretching your legs before a run and the decrease in the possibility of shin splints. But it's not like you still might get shin splints if you're running a lot, and you still might experience micro abrasions in your cunt or your asshole if you're doing a lot of fisting. That it can happen, and it's important to recognize that. If the sports analogy doesn't work for you, I'm not a very sporty person, so it's a stretch, speaking of stretching, for me to try to, you know, reach across the aisle and be like, you know, sports, sex, kind of like that. No, it's the same with dancing. It's the same with any kind of physical activity, right? So, and also anybody who knows anything about sports or dancing, especially professional dancers or people who are, you know, accomplishing great feats of grace with their bodies and performance art. When you warm up a body and you accomplish these things with your body, then your body also like returns to a resting state, right? So all of this is to say that if you are staying hydrated, taking your time, listening to your body, using lots of lube, communicating with your partner, understanding what is a pleasurable place that you're pushing yourself to, maybe outside what you've experienced before, your comfort zone, but understanding what discomfort or pain means that you need to take a pause or take a break entirely. That is what is going to make it so that you can have the experience that you desire to have while reducing the risk of harm or damage. So practice really helps, you know, solo sex practice really helps. Having different sized anal toys, especially plugs, which are really great for being able to lube up and put in yourself when your partner's pleasure or expectation is not a factor, getting used to how that feels, and then maybe doing another kind of, you know, engaging in another kind of masturbation, enjoying another kind of masturbation or solo sex, and getting used to how it feels to have different size plugs, different materials of plugs inside you. The best thing about a butt plug is that it's very like, look, ma, no hands, right? So your hands are free to do other things that you might like to do or use other toys on different parts of your body. And, you know, I teach entire classes on anal hygiene and prep and enema play. So if you're interested in that, definitely go to tinahorn.net and subscribe to my newsletter to hear when the next time is that I'm teaching about that. I also offer one-on-one counseling, coaching. I'm not a professional. I'm not a medical professional, so I don't want to say counseling, but in an official capacity, but very, very informed coaching and consulting. And I don't know. I mean, I think also sometimes people have a lot of fear that leads to a lot of physical tension, and that actually can lead to injury. So really doing what you need to do in order to relax and be present in the experience, I think, is a huge, huge factor in getting what you want.
Well, I love that kind of idea of kind of like getting comfortable on your own, practicing it, use and see what does it feel like in your body and what excites you, so you can communicate that with partner. That's here. It's very, very important. Going back to analogy with sport, like a Olympic of fisting, I would imagine is fisting parties. And I know you talk about it in the book. Can you tell us more about that? So like, I'm sure there are people there to watch, but for people who engage, what does that look like?
Well, I always like to repeat the line from the John Cameron Mitchell movie, Short Bus, a great film about sex culture and parties. If you haven't seen it, it's a narrative film with unsimulated sex. So a great movie to watch with a partner as foreplay, and a fabulous sort of depiction of sex culture in San Francisco in the early 21st century. But anyway, there's a great line in that movie: voyeurism is participation. And I think that's definitely true.
That is true.
At sex parties, there's a whole chapter about sex parties and orgies in Wired People Into That. And yeah, for people participating, I mean, the thing about going to a fisting party to fist or be fisted and or be fisted is that you're introducing elements of voyeurism and exhibitionism to the play. And there is, the listeners may be aware of a tremendous taboo against having sex in rooms with other people who are having sex in our culture, right? Going back to heteronormativity, the idea that you're supposed to have sex with one person for the rest of your life or at least one at a time. And so, you know, being in a room with other people who are doing all kinds of things, which might include something similar to what you're doing or might look really different, you know, that's also great sex education. And, you know, you can teach and learn so much from, you know, I want people to buy my book and read my book and listen to my podcast and listen to your podcast. But like, ultimately, sex is one of those things that you really, you got to be there. You know, you got to learn through practice. You got to learn by doing. It's so important. And so, yeah, sex parties are a great way to do that. And I think that the thing that I would recommend for people going to fisting parties is the same that I would recommend for any kind of sex party, which is just really be mindful of how incredibly overwhelming it can be to transgress that taboo of public sex. And, you know, it's not public sex in the sense that you're like fucking in a dressing room at Victoria's Secret, but, you know, public sex in the sense that it's a space, you know, whether it's a private home or a sex, you know, commercial space like a sex club or studio, where by stepping through that threshold, you are agreeing to transgress certain taboos, that certain social taboos that we have in currently in Western society about being in the same, having sex in a space where other people are having sex, being naked in the same place that other people are naked. And just, I recommend watching. I recommend spending time in those places, not just like getting in, having your scene, not paying attention to people and getting out. And yeah, and to be curious and respectful that people might do something different than you. And you have a lot to learn from that. And at the very least, not yucking someone's yum, not being critical of their style and what makes them happy and what brings them pleasure and how they like to do things. And there's just so many possibilities.
Well, Tina, I bet our listeners want to learn more about you, about workshop. I love the book, educational/erotica, all of the above. So tell us more about that. Where can people access you?
Yeah, access me. So tinahorn.net is my website. That's TINAHORN.net. I'm most active on Instagram. That's at tinahornsass. Which is spelled TINAHORNSASS. And why are people into that? Probably when you're listening to this is available now and hopefully in perpetuity, wherever books are sold or taken up in the library. Like I said, definitely recommend patronizing your local indie bookstore. It's going to be available in a lot of sex shops because I have a lot of relationships with places like that. If it's not currently available in your local indie bookstore or sex shop, let them know that you're interested in it. That really helps me out. And it's also available from the giant corporations that sell books. So if that's the thing that's most accessible to you, you do you. I'm not going to stop you. And like I said, it's in hardcover, ebook, and audiobook form if you want to listen to these vocal cords vibrate in your ears some more. And yeah, definitely go to my website and subscribe to my newsletter. That is the most consistent and best way to find out where I'm teaching workshops on fisting and enema play and all kinds of different things. Lots of dirty talk, lots of fantasy and role play is what I specialize in. And let's see, I also write like fiction comic books. I write science fiction and horror and detective thrillers. So I have a comic out called Safe Sex, which is a science fiction book, and another comic out called Deprog, which is kind of like a detective crime thriller. And what else do I do? You could, Why Are People Into That is available wherever you pod. Check that out. Definitely check out Hacking Hustling for all of the grassroots organizing and advocacy work that they do, but also the podcast that I have been working on with them about FosTA-SESTA and the sex worker rights movement. And I think that just about sums it up for now.
Well, Tina, what don't you do? Like, you're so talented at all this wonderful thing that you do. And I'm glad that we had an opportunity to hear about your wisdom, about your work, meaningful writing that you've been engaging in. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I love your show, and it was a pleasure to be here.
As we finish up this episode, if you have any experience with fisting and you enjoy it, feel free to shoot us an email and I'll share it with others. I know this is a taboo topic, but I want to make sure that there are places that people can learn from it. Before we close this episode, I want to give a huge thanks to our sponsor, FirmTech. They provide one of the top products in the market. Their cock ring is amazing. It's research proven. It's designed by a physician. This is the one product I often recommend to my clients. You can learn more about it at myfirmtech.com and enter the code SEXOLOGY to get 10% off. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you love our show, please make sure you are writing a review on Apple Podcasts or CastBox and share the news about this episode with your friends by sharing it with them. Thank you. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.